Just a reminder, today's conference is being recorded.
Oh. Hi, everyone.
Hi.
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 Hello.
It's a little bit after 3, so I want to go ahead and get started. My name is Erin Lyons, and I'm the State Outreach Team Manager at CSN. I want to introduce you or welcome you all to the CSN Technical Assistance Webinar on Formative Evaluation. This Children's Safety Network is funded by the Federal Maternal and Child Health Bureau to help prevent injuries and violence among children and adolescents by strengthening the injury prevention capacity of state maternal and child health and other health department staff. Today's webinar is the first of two on program evaluation. The second one will take place on May 23rd and will focus on outcome evaluation. And I know that some of you have already heard about this upcoming webinar. These webinars represent the first step in CSN's provision of technical assistance on evaluation. Following them, CSN staff will be available to assist participants who have further questions or would like more customized technical assistance. Before I turn it over to Rhonda, I want to walk through a couple of logistical issues with everyone before we get started. For those of you who are participating via Illuminate, and I see that there's 24 or so of you right now, you'll be able to ask questions during the presentation using the direct messaging and hand raising features. I don't know how many of you have used this technology before, but if you want to send a question to Rhonda, you know, while she's speaking, you can type into the box directly above the send button at the bottom left of your screen. And if you do not wish for your question to go to all participants, be sure to select moderators from the drop-down box next to the send button before you send your message. Rhonda's going to take questions sent via direct messaging at several points in the presentation. And so you can type your question in and she'll be able to answer it at a couple of points in her presentation. You can also use the direct messaging feature to communicate directly with other participants. And to do this, you would just select the name of the participant you wish to communicate with from the drop-down box next to the send button and then type your message into the same box that you would use to type a question to Rhonda. I also want to let you all know that the phone line is going to be muted today while Rhonda delivers her presentation. So those of you who are participating only over the phone will not be able to ask questions during the presentation. But once Rhonda has reached the end of the presentation and is ready to take questions, the phone line will be unmuted so that participants can ask questions over the phone. If you have a question at the end of the presentation and are participating via Illuminate, you can raise your hand using the raise hand button that's in the middle of your screen on the left-hand side. And then Rhonda will address questions and answers in the order they're received. Once your question has been answered, it'd be great if you could put your hand down by clicking the same button. It just kind of makes things flow a little bit better. If you're participating via the phone only, Rhonda will let you know when you can ask questions. That was a lot of information. Is there anything that anyone has a question on now before we get started? Okay. I want to turn it over to Dr. Rhonda Zaycox now, who is CSN's evaluation consultant. Dr. Zaycox comes to CSN with many years of experience in using evaluation to develop and implement programs, and we're very excited to have her on board. Rhonda, before you begin, let's put the phone line on mute, and then I'll ask you to go ahead and get started.
All participants have been muted.
Good afternoon, and thank you, Erin, for the introduction. I look forward to our time this afternoon discussing formative evaluation. That's me. Our agenda really is threefold today. First, we want to talk a little bit about why are many programs unsuccessful. Then we'll move on to talking about how can formative evaluation improve a program's chance of success. Then we'll wrap up by talking about how can formative evaluation be integrated into the program development process, and we will apply this through a booster seat promotion program. Everybody wants outcomes, we know that. Managers, politicians, the public at large. Stakeholders want to know whether programs are working, that is, making a difference. Desired outcomes means, of course, that our program efforts are paying off. We envision our program successfully targeting the bullseye, that is, improving children's safety. Yet, many of our programs struggle to succeed. For example, the Task Force on Community Preventative Services, which is largely spearheaded by CDC and aims to compile evidence-based practice, found that 50% of interventions systematically reviewed in their first edition did not have discernible effects on their proposed outcomes. This, of course, means that many of our programs are not hitting the bullseye as we hoped. Question becomes, why do programs fail? Of course, there are numerous reasons why programs fail, but one is due to poorly designed, ill-conceived programs. The early U.S. public housing program serves as a good example of a poorly designed program. Due to concerns with growth of slums, overcrowding, and deterioration of housing in the nation's urban areas in the early 20th century, U.S. government constructed large-scale, high-rise apartment buildings to provide clean, affordable, and temporary shelter for the poor. These outcomes, unfortunately, were never realized, as these isolated cities within cities created subcultures of poverty and economic instability. As we know, most have been torn down. Simply put, this idea of constructing such large areas of public housing in urban areas was a bad idea. There are several characteristics of poorly designed programs, and here are a couple. The first, of course, some programs are poorly designed because they are based on faulty logic. The selected strategy or activities cannot make the intended changes as expected, such as the U.S. public housing example we just spoke about. Second, some fail to connect with a target population. Programs do not reach them, they do not resonate with them, they're not understood by them. Thirdly, they fail to be well implemented. Inappropriate settings are selected, and there's an incompatibility between program and delivery settings, and there's unrealistic, untested expectations about how the program can be implemented. Now, I'd like to walk us through a brief example of how a poorly designed program can fail through a hypothesized child prevention abuse program. Let's assume the goal of this program, of course, was to prevent child abuse. The target for the program were at-risk families, young, single mothers. The program was a parenting class for first-time mothers of infants, newborns, held weekly with group sessions at a hospital, and the workshops were mostly done through didactic presentations by an older nurse. The primary objective was to improve parenting skills. Let's also assume that an outcome evaluation of this program was conducted. To answer the question, did the program succeed? Did it work? Here are some data from that outcome evaluation. As we see on the left side of the slide, there is a variable called parent skills, and that was looking at the percent of parents that improved adequate parenting skills. And the second side, we see some bar charts that said child abuse, and that was the percent of children where documented child abuse had occurred. The green bar indicate those individuals who were enrolled in the experiment group, those that received that parenting program. The blue bars are those that served as controls, very similar young women with newborns in same situations that did not receive the program. 1 year after the program, a comparison is undertaken between those who received the program in the green versus those who served as controls in the blue. And as you can see by just looking at this chart, we see there's no difference in parenting, improvement in parenting skills, or reductions in cases of child abuse. We therefore would conclude with this type of differences between the two groups, and thus the program was not successful in reaching its objectives and goals. The next question becomes, why was the program unsuccessful? Although, again, there can be many reasons why the program was unsuccessful, we can examine some process data to determine what might be some of the problems. And here are two pieces of data that was collected from participants who attended the program about their attendance of the workshop and their general satisfaction with the workshop. And again, we can see here on the left side that the attendance was very low. Only 10% of the participants actually attended all of the sessions. And when asked about their general satisfaction with the program, only 20% said that they were satisfied. The other 80% were not. If participants did not attend the program or did not like it, how would we expect that their parenting skills and or child abuse issues be addressed? So we might want to dwell in further and ask, well, why did participants stop coming? Why were they dissatisfied? And theoretically, we could go back and talk to some of the participants and ask about their experiences with the program. These might be some example findings that we would identify. Participants report the hospital setting was unwelcoming and inconvenient. The group format was very awkward for them. The workshops were too didactic. The teacher, the nurse, was too condescending and authoritative. Wasn't personalized, not enough time for me, my issues, or few appropriate examples to my situation. There is nothing more frustrating than futile program efforts, just like the one we went through this past moment. If we put a lot of effort into our programs, we expect that our efforts should pay off. We don't want our program efforts to be as futile as Sisyphus, a Greek mythological god who Zeus contends to eternally rolling a rock up a hill only to have it fall back down again. The best way to avoid futility is to develop well-designed programs from the start. This line graph illustrates the relationship between program design and program success. On the horizontal line, we have program success, which can range, of course, from low, not successful at all, to high, very successful. On the vertical line, we have program design. Programs can be very poorly designed to excellent. The graph simply illustrates this relationship that the greater, the better the design, the more likelihood of program success. The planning challenge, of course, is how can well-designed programs be created before implementation to increase chances of success? One strategy to help us with this is to integrate formative evaluation into the program development phase. We can view a program as having three distinct life cycles, with program evaluation assisting in all three components. The first, of course, is program development, where we actually identify the problem, identify the target population, set out a course of strategy, and develop activities to address that problem. Formative evaluation can play an essential role in helping us develop good programs. The second phase is program implementation, as identified in the teal box. And here is, of course, when the program is actually implemented. And process evaluation can be an essential tool for helping us implement programs well. The third phase, as indicated in the purple box, is, of course, the program effect, whether the program worked or not. And outcome evaluation helps us to discern this. This side simply just lists the purposes of the evaluation that I just went over. Just want to re-acknowledge that, of course, today we're focusing on formative evaluation, but on the webinar on May 23rd, as I believe Erin mentioned, we will be talking about outcome evaluation then. So formative evaluation helps us answer many questions in terms of what is the best way to influence the target population? How can activities be reached, understood, or accepted by the target population? How can activities be easily in delivery settings? It's useful because it helps develop ideas for program activities. It can refine program activities, pre-test them prior to implementation, pilot test new activities prior to full-scale implementation, and help tailor existing programs to new target populations. Now, I'd like to give an example of how formative evaluation was extensively used to develop a very successful television academic program for children. I'm going to take a big leap of faith here that everyone on this call is familiar with Sesame Street, either watching it as a child yourself, watching it with a child, either your own or someone else, or at least seeing the ubiquitous advertisements everywhere. We all can probably pick Big Bird out of the crowd. Although Sesame Street and all of the TV education programs that followed seem like a no-brainer today, it wasn't that way in the early 1960s. For years, educators had observed a large disparity in academic performance between poor and average 5- and 6-year-olds entering first grade. Remember, this was before Head Start and any and most early intervention programs. A group of folks in New York came together to address this problem and brainstormed a crazy notion at the time that one way to make the playing ground more even for these kids entering first grade was providing education via the TV, as TV had become widespread even among poor families in the 1960s. However, the originators were laughed out of the boardroom when trying to raise money for this idea because all good educators knew that children could not be educated by an idiot box. Rather, children learn from interaction, tailoring, and hands-on experience. The Sesame Street originators proved them wrong, as Sesame Street has been subjected to more studies on academic performance than most childhood education programs, and results indicate over and over again that those who watched Sesame Street, even from poor backgrounds, improved academically compared to those who did not. Formative evaluation played an essential role in developing the actual Sesame Street that kept children engaged. Let me just share one example of a formative evaluation work they did called the Distractor. The Sesame Street creators knew the most important aspect of the program was to gain children's attention, because no matter how good the content was, it didn't matter unless children actually watched it. Therefore, they wanted to make sure every minute of the script was engaging to children, compelling them to watch it. This was how they did it. They'd go out in the streets of New York City, recruit 3- to 5-year-olds to their studio with 2 screens as you see here. They gave them some popcorn and told them to watch the screen on the left side. That was the screen that was projecting scenes from upcoming Sesame Street scripts. But they also projected on the right side animal and landscape scenes. Nothing too distracting, but would provide enough enjoyment that if children got tired of the Sesame Street scene, they would move their eyes and look at the other screen. Trained recorders would watch all children's eyes every 30 seconds and noted when they moved their eyes from the Sesame Street screen to the animal screen, believing that means that they were losing interest or becoming bored at that moment. For any Sesame Street where there was less than 85% of kids who were not watching, they reworked it until at least 85% were. How's that for making a program capture its audience attention? And I would suggest this is one reason why Sesame Street has been so successful, was given the amount of formative work that was put into the program initially and as it continues today. My primary point is that formative evaluation is analogous to a primary prevention strategy, which we sometimes call upstream prevention, trying to prevent a problem before it occurs. For example, home-based early intervention for families at risk for child abuse that focus on positive parenting and financial service support may indeed prevent child abuse from occurring. Similarly, if formative evaluation is incorporated early on in the program development stage, then many program pitfalls that could derail program success could be avoided. I like this quote because I think it illustrates the idea of formative evaluation very well. How is it that we can find time to do it over, but not the time to do it right initially? Now, what I would like to do is apply formative evaluation into a hypothesized program case study on booster seats. We selected this topic because reducing the rate of death to children age 14 years and younger caused by motor vehicle crashes is one of MCH Bureau's national performance measures, that is, number 10. Many state MCH departments either implement or partner with other organizations on child passenger safety programs. With that said, however, some of you may be less familiar with child passenger safety programs, but we hope you will glean some lessons that you can apply to other programs that you are involved with. Before we jump into the case study, I would like just to give a brief overview of Booster Seat for those of you who may be unfamiliar to the reason why this is such an important program for young people. NHTSA, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, recommends Booster Seat for children 8 years and younger, or 4 feet 9 inches tall. Booster seats have been found to reduce injury risk by around 60% for 4 to 7 year olds. Although 98% of infants are routinely restrained, those are those under 12 months, only 73% of 4 to 7 year olds are routinely restrained according to national estimates by NHTSA. Again, according to NHTSA, approximately 72% of CPS, that is child passenger safety seats, are misused in a way that could increase risk of injury during a crash. There has been several systematic reviews of evaluated booster seat and education programs, and those have been found effective for increasing use of seats as well as proper use of seats. There are several different distribution options for booster seats in terms of trying to increase access to folks, in terms of giving them away free, providing loans that are returned back, and providing vouchers where families could redeem vouchers at a retailer store for a discount. Now, with that background, let's move into the context for this case study. Let's assume a state MCH department received a 3-year grant to implement a booster seat promotion program. An MCH staff member was assigned to coordinate the program. And like many of our efforts, a planning committee was convened, comprised of key traffic safety stakeholders in the state, who was charged with developing the plan. The goal of the program was to reduce the rate of motor vehicle crash deaths and injuries among 4 to 8 year olds. The target population was identified to be low-income families with children 4 to 8, reasoning that they wouldn't have the resources perhaps to purchase the seats, may be unaware about the importance. Program objectives include increased booster seat use among 4 to 8 years old, but also increased correct booster seat use for the same age group. The identified program strategy was as follows. The MCH department will fund and provide technical assistance to community health clinics to deliver the program to low-income families. It was thought through some formative work that community health clinics would be the best way to reach this target population throughout the state. And they focused on having booster seats distributed to improve access and also parent education to increase knowledge on and to increase knowledge on importance of use and proper use. Now, this is a big challenge the committee faced. How can booster seat distribution and parent education activities be developed to increase the likelihood that clinics will implement them, that means distribute them and educate parents, and the target population families will actually use them? And the picture in the left-hand side, although it may be difficult to see in the smaller version, that's actually a picture of a clinic, and that picture will be used to represent the clinic setting. Formative evaluation can be a useful tool for the planning committee, as indicated by the table on the left side of this slide. Many times when we plan a program, however, us as the planning team, we are far removed from the delivery setting. We don't know much about how community health clinics operate, as indicated by the picture of the waiting room there. And as the planning committee, we are many times far removed from the target population, in this case, low-income families with children 4 to 7. What this slide is suggesting is that formative evaluation can help bridge the gap between us sitting on the left side of the slide in the planning group with those that we want to ensure we develop well-designed programs that will meet the needs of the clinic to implement the program effectively and that will resonate well with the target population. So let's talk about how formative evaluation can help be this trusty bridge. There are four general types of formative evaluation that can help a planning committee flesh out what activities should be developed. First is to gather information about the target population and the delivery setting. The second is not to reinvent the wheel, to search for existing programs for possible modifications. The third is to pretest any activity materials that were developed, like handouts, training materials. And lastly, to pilot test the actual implementation of the activity before full implementation. Now, we will go through all of these, but we're first going to start with the top teach square, gather information about target population and delivery setting. The purpose for gathering information is pretty straightforward. For the target population, it is to determine what booster seat distribution and parent educations would most likely reach, resonate with, and be understood by the target population. The planning committee also wants to gather information about the delivery setting, the clinics, to determine best ways to distribute booster seats and educate parents within the context of community health clinics. Also to identify partners who can collaborate with program implementation. Before we move on, I want to take a moment to underscore the importance of gathering information about the target population when developing activities. Just want you to ask yourself a question. Would Nike develop a new product, especially a costly one, without gathering information about the target population to help develop the sneaker? The shoe displayed here is actually an old one. It is a Nike Air Foamposite, which was originally designed for Penny Hardaway when he was playing for the Orlando Magic in the late 1990s. When this shoe was released in 1997, it retailed for $180, the most expensive Nike shoe to be released in its day. To ensure the saleability of this expensive shoe, Nike gathered enormous amount of data on individuals who would be the target population to purchase a shoe to ensure that the shoe would resonate well with them so they would buy it. Okay, let's talk about some questions that the planning committee might have about the target population to help them figure out the best way to develop the parent education and the booster seat distribution. These are some example questions that might be asked. What are the demographic characteristics of low-income families that use community health clinics? What is their awareness about recommendations for and importance of using booster seats? What are the barriers for not using booster seats? What are their preferred languages and literacy levels? What is the preferred method to receive boosters and education about how to use them? Important questions that the planning committee would want to have answered. Similarly, there are also several questions the planning committee would want to have answered about the delivery setting, the community health clinic. Specifically, what is the community health clinic capacity for implementing programs? And it may vary across clinics in terms of time, resources, interest in the program. What is their preferred education method? Who should do it? What is the knowledge interest of providers? When and for how long? What is their preferred distribution method? Who can partner with implementing the program in terms of booster manufacturers, retailers, and certified child passenger